Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for The Christophers, and today we'll feature part two of my interview with author Jim Wahlberg, discussing his recovery from addiction, how God's love helped him forgive his father's shortcomings, and how Jim responded when he learned his own son was an addict. After that, I'll be sharing some very moving letters from The Christophers mailbag about how our ministry and message has changed people's lives. Stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and if you were with us last week, you heard the first part of Jim Wahlberg's powerful story, a story he chronicles in the memoir The Big Hustle, a Boston street kid's story of addiction and redemption. Jim talked about growing up in a poor family as one of nine kids and taking his first drink of alcohol at age eight. That event and his yearning for acceptance set Jim on a road that led to addiction, homelessness, crime, and prison. And one of the most stunning statements he made was that he never heard the words, "God loves you," until he was in his 20s, even though he went to church as a child. So when did he finally hear that message? When Mother Teresa visited the prison he was in and gave a talk to the inmates. Her words set him on the road to embrace his Catholic faith and recover from his addiction. When time ran out on our last show, Jim and I kept talking and we covered some more important ground. He discussed how forgiving his father for his shortcomings helped him in the recovery process, and Jim also shared what it felt like when he learned that his own son was an addict. So that's where we're picking things up today. Here now is the rest of my conversation with Jim Wahlberg. Jim, one of the other aspects of the story I wanted to touch on is part of, I think, your recovery process is that you were able to forgive the shortcomings of your dad, which you write about in the book. And I'm curious, that forgiveness, I've got to assume it also has something to do with the faith and to know that Jesus forgives you. That helped you get to that point of forgiveness. But just talk about what forgiveness did in your recovery process.
Well, also, I think, you know, so it also came with understanding, right? Mm-hmm. See, I learned a lot in the process, right? I learned about my dad and how he was raised. I learned about his limitations. I learned about alcoholism, right? Which he suffered from, right? Mm-hmm. I learned about all that through my own recovery and my relationship with God. I learned about that. I learned about myself, and then I saw the similarities between he and I, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, where I came to with it was that he did the best he could with the tools that he was given, mm-hmm. right? And also, you know, I was forced to take a look at my own behavior, right? And where I was responsible for a lot of the things that happened in my life. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, all the things that I was desperate to hear as a child, right, from my dad, I was able to hear as a man, mm-hmm. right, from my dad, right? I love you. I'm proud of you. I respect you, right? Mm-hmm. I so longed to hear those words as a child. Even just the "I love you," that was not the kind of thing that happened with my dad. My mom, on the other hand, was very loving, mm-hmm. but my dad, not so much. And you know, just about 2 years ago, I sat with my uncle, who was my dad's older brother, mm-hmm. and Archie is the oldest in my dad's family. He's a great, great man, and you know, he's in his 90s, he's frail. And so I was up in Massachusetts and I said, I'm going to take my uncle out for lunch, you know, because I love him and I respect him and I want to see him. I want to spend a little time with him. And so we went to lunch and we started talking and he said, "Tell me about my brother." Right. He said, "Tell me about my brother as a dad and as a man." Right. Because I didn't know him that way. I only knew him as my brother. Right. I know that you had a lot of difficulties with each other, and tell me about that. And I said to him, I said, you know, I always longed to for his embrace and for him to tell me that he loved me. And the only time I ever heard him say those words to me is if I smelled alcohol. Mm. And my uncle pondered for a second and he said, consider yourself fortunate, because in our house, we never heard it at all.
Wow.
And I thought about it, and I thought about my uncle in particular, because I say to my uncle, who again is a great man, I say, Uncle Archie, I love you. And he says, thank you. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say, I love you too. Right? He says, thank you. Right. Uh-huh. And if you, when you're hanging up the phone with him, if you say, hey, I love you, Arch, he'll be like, okay, I love you. No, he won't say, I love you. Like, thank you. Like, it's not in his DNA. And he is, the funny thing about him is he's a very faithful man. Mm-hmm. And he was a daily communicant for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now with his age and his frailties, he and obviously COVID, he doesn't get out to mass.
Sure.
But that was a very important thing for me to learn. Mm-hmm. And for me to understand. And this was after my dad was gone. Yeah. Right. But, you know, my dad and I, we healed a lot. Right. Good. And yeah. It wasn't a lot. A lot of it wasn't through words. It was through actions. Mm-hmm. You know, like my dad lived with me in my home with my family as he got older and got weaker and was sick. Mm-hmm. He lived with us. And then when we decided to move to Florida, we tried to take him with us and he wouldn't go. So he moved mm-hmm. from my house to one of my siblings' houses.
Okay.
But we were very close and he loved my children. Yeah. He expressed to them all the things that I wanted to hear as a child. I watched him pour over them, yeah. right? And tell them, oh, how adorable they are, how much he loved them, how, you know, all the yeah. things that, you know, I guess that a grandparent is supposed to do. And it becomes easier to do with age, I guess, or mm-hmm. at least with grandchildren.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a lot of healing. We had a lot of healing.
That is great. I'm talking to Jim Wahlberg. His book is called The Big Hustle. One quick final question, because it's also a part of your story that your own son came to struggle with addiction. And I'm curious, how did you, and I know you deal with, because you've addressed it, you deal with other parents who are going yeah. through the same thing. Did your own experiences as an addict kind of give you the tools for how to deal with your son? Or was it such a unique challenge? Every addict is its own problem.
So I thought I knew exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the absolute first moment that I realized that my son was using drugs
mm-hmm.
Was one of the most devastating moments of my entire life. Mm-hmm. Because for his entire life, I had been in recovery. For his right. entire life, I have been hammering home the message that when it comes to drugs and alcohol, we can't afford to gamble because we come from a long line of people who couldn't handle it. Right. right? So we need to be vigilant about that. And we make sure that we can't afford to even try it. Right. Mm-hmm. And my son's like, yeah, dad. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about, this is my firstborn child.
Yeah.
The reason that I was married, the reason that we have a family, right?
Yeah.
And I know was God's plan, but it certainly wasn't my plan, mm-hmm. right? And to find out that it all, the moment we confronted him with a cup, right? We want to test you for drugs. And we want you to give us a sample in this cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in his face and everything about him changed in that instant.
Mm-hmm.
He lied to my face. And for the first time, I knew he was lying to me.
Yeah.
And it hurt. Mm-hmm. It hurt. And it hurt more. I hurt for him
mm-hmm.
more than I hurt for me. I hurt yeah. for him because I knew what was out there. Unlike a lot of parents that suspect what is out there, or they think they know what's out there, or they think mm-hmm. they know about the pain, or they're afraid. I knew exactly what was out there for him.
Yeah.
Right. And with all the information he had, he still was doing it. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, it was so much more difficult than my own journey. Mm-hmm. So much more difficult because I didn't love myself.
Right.
You know, I didn't love myself when I was out there. I didn't love myself, but I loved this kid with everything I had.
Yeah.
And it hurt. And the instant we found out, it just, everything went spiraled out of control and got worse constantly. You know, it just took all the oxygen out of the house. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I knew what to do. Right. Mm-hmm. But you know, I didn't know what to do because what worked for me wasn't working for him.
Right. Right. Right.
And my wife, who I'm here to tell you is a saint, right. Who is an absolute, the most amazing woman I've ever met in my life. And I'm so glad that God chose her for me to go through life with. She knew what to do.
Yeah.
She knew what to do. I didn't know what to do. She took it to the foot of the cross. She prayed. She was watching EWTN and she saw some guys from a Catholic faith-based community for addicts giving their testimonies. While she was watching that, I was in a car driving from South Florida to Pennsylvania to take my son to another rehab. And she called me and she said, I know what my son needs. He needs God. And yeah, she was right. And I was helpless. Right. I was, cause you know, as a man, we say, oh, I can take care of this. I know what to do. I'll fix this. Especially a man that's had this experience.
Yeah.
I know the way out. Follow me. And, sometimes it's the message that's no good. Sometimes it's the messenger that's not the right person. Sometimes it's too close, well, you know, whatever it is. But ultimately, what ended up happening was is my son accepted the invitation to go into that community, Comunitas Chamacolo, which was started by a little old nun in Torino, Italy, Mother Alvira, and has now impacted and saved thousands of families across the world. And ultimately, by him accepting that invitation, we all ended up at the foot of the cross.
Right.
We all ended up at the foot of the cross. And there was a time when my son and I were in, I think we were in Medjugorje at the time. And we were having a moment where we were a very healing moment. And I was very emotional and I was a mess. And I thanked him for being an addict. Because of what he suffered, we are now all at the foot of the cross.
Right.
Right. And had he not suffered all that he suffered, maybe we would have just continued on and we would have just, you know, managed well. Yeah. Right. And we would have made sure that the neighbors thought we were great people and we had, you know, two cars in the driveway.
The superficial stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I know that I had to go through everything that I went through to be the man I am today. And I assume that that was God's plan for him too, that he had to go through everything he had to go through to be the man he will is and the man he will still become because he's still a young guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So God's love saves the day once again. Last question. What are your hopes for people who both read the book, The Big Hustle, and also see the movie, What About the Kids?
Wow. So, I mean, I think that the book is for me, it's about stigma. It's about not judging people. Right. And also knowing that anything is possible with God. Right. Anything. Right. Nothing's too big for God. If I can be saved from what I went through and what I suffered and the pain that I caused others to suffer to be used by God in this way that I'm being used by him, than anybody can.
Yeah.
Right. And with the film, it's also, I have to say that a recurring theme for me is stigma. It's the way we think about each other, the way we treat each other and the way we judge each other. Right. When you look at the family in the movie, What About the Kids? When you look at that little 8-year-old girl in the lines that she delivers as she's eulogizing her own mother.
Great scene. Yeah.
I heard what you were saying about my mother last night at the wake.
Yeah.
You were saying that she was a bad person. She wasn't a bad person. She was a good person. She was my mother. She loved me. She was a sick person. And you weren't there to help us. Right?
Yeah. Like, it was a powerful scene.
Hey, and I'm going to tell you something. That little girl, Layla Scalise, remember that name? Yeah. That little girl blew veteran actors away.
Right.
Filming that movie. She knew her line. She knew their line. She knew, you know, what they were supposed to be inferring and what they were supposed to be, the feeling that they were supposed to be conveying. I mean, this girl was incredible, right? Yeah. And, you know, to look at this family and to know that, this little girl will go through life without a mother, right? And we're hopeful in the end. The movie is hopeful. It is about redemption. But no matter what, that little girl will grow up without a mother.
Yeah.
Her mother won't be there on her wedding day. Her mother won't be there to talk about the important things that a mother and daughter share. And through no fault of her own, right? And so we need to stop. There was a guy that told me, I was sitting down with a guy, he was like a marketing guy. We were talking about addiction. This was during the 2016 election. And we were at the height of the opioid epidemic. And he said, you people don't understand that nobody cares. You people. And I'm like, you people? What do you mean, you people? He's like, you know, you people that are on this addiction thing. He's like, he pulled out, he goes, let me show you the latest Gallup poll. And I want you to be honest with me. Do you see addiction on here anywhere? And I had to be honest. The addiction was not on there. And he said, you people want everybody to look at this as a disease, and you people want everybody to look at people like victims, right? He said, when you call your neighbor and tell your neighbor that your kid has cancer, they cook you a casserole. They cut your grass. They go to the supermarket for you. When you call your neighbors and say, my son is suffering from addiction, they pull their shades down. They lock their windows. They lock their doors. They tell their kids to stay away from you, and they avoid you in the supermarket.
Wow.
Why is it that we do that? Why we can't love each other? And be kind to each other and be there for each other and serve each other. Why is it that we're willing to serve somebody in this instance, but not in this instance, when the situation is exactly the same? This person is in danger of losing their child.
Yeah.
Right. Why is it that we do that? And that is, it's stigma. It's lack of understanding. It's lack of education on the topic. And I get it. There's a lot of things for people to take the time to educate themselves on, right?
Yeah.
Most people don't educate themselves on addiction until addiction shows up at their door.
Right. No, it's incredible. It's a powerful statement you just made. And I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I've been talking to Jim Wahlberg. His book is called The Big Hustle, A Boston Street Kid Story of Addiction and Redemption. The movie is called What About the Kids? And the website is whataboutthekidsfilm.com. You can watch it there for free. It's a short film, so it won't take much of your time. But for me, both the book and the movie, what they convey and also our conversation today is the power of God's love and mercy, more so than judgment. I think we're, as human beings, we're quick to judge and say this is wrong and that's wrong. But the real things that are life-changing in your life, in your son's life, and in other people's lives is God's love and mercy, accepting God's love. And I appreciate you for sharing that idea in the book, in the movie, and also with us today. So thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you, Tony. Take care. God bless.
Before we go to our message from the Christophers, I want to share the trailer of Jim's movie, What About the Kids? It's about a young girl whose parents are both addicts, and when her mother dies of an overdose, it impacts the whole family and leads them to seek guidance from God. Here's the trailer for What About the Kids?
Call. Hey.
No, God, I don't have any favors to ask of you. I just wanted to thank you. Thank you for giving me people who really love me as much as I love them. My mom never cooked for me much. She was always sick. Now that she's gone, I know why. Not that anyone has told me. Everyone thinks I'm too young to understand, but I do understand. My mommy was a drug addict, and I also know that a lot of people think drug addicts are bad people. Even though bad things have happened, and mommy is up in heaven with you. Hi, mommy. And daddy is getting better in the halfway better house.
And if you're looking for a miracle, open your eyes, bro. Your daughter's a miracle.
Don't you want me to find us a new place?
I do more than anything, but I want it to last. Thank you for giving me people who really love me as much as I love them. I still have my Nana and Papa, who, by the way, huge fan of yours. She's the one who told me all about you and your son, Jesus.
But Father, please, please, please help that little girl.
We need to lift those suffering with addiction up.
I promise that I will get better.
Anyway, I just wanted to say hello to you and let you know that you'll be hearing from me from now on. Thank you, God. You rest in my
arms. I'm Tony Rossi, and that was the trailer for What About the Kids? It was courtesy of Wall Street Productions. You can find the movie online at whataboutthekidsfilm.com. Now I'll be back in a minute after this message from the Christophers.
One of the mysteries and miracles of Christianity is that Jesus, the Son of God, extends the hand of friendship to each of us. This friendship can be just as real as the other relationships we have, and it is always life-changing. So how do we go about making and deepening a friendship with Christ? The Christophers offer several ideas in our news note called Making a Friend of Jesus. It explores what Scripture, the saints, and more current voices have to say about nurturing our relationship with the God whose love for us is boundless and unconditional. To request your free copy of Making a Friend of Jesus, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to Christopher Close Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and since we've got a few minutes left in today's show, I want to share some of the wonderful letters we've received recently. The first one came from Stephanie. She wrote, "I just wanted to reach out and say thank you for your lovely news notes. I am a patient currently, and also a mother and wife. My hospitalization for the last year and my journey has been very difficult. I was ready today to give up hope in God, as my situation has been extraordinarily complex, not to mention spiritually confusing. However, this afternoon, I reached into an envelope of materials from a chaplain and pulled out your Christopher News Notes, Hold On to Hope and Facing Depression, along with a booklet on prayer from Our Daily Bread. The mere fact that these papers exist, along with your motto, It's Better to Light One Candle Than to Curse the Darkness, has given me the impetus to hold on to hope indeed. Now I must do the hard work of praying for God to change or clarify my situation so that my family and I can move forward. In this endeavor, I ask that you please join me in lifting myself and my family up in prayer when you can. Thank you so much for the work you do and for your advanced prayers. Thanks for lighting that candle for me so I no longer curse the darkness. Sincerely, Stephanie." And then Stephanie wrote again saying, "Since I wrote this, I have recovered some and am planning my discharge home. Thanks again for the part you all played in my recovery, albeit unknowns to you. I will pray for you." Well, Stephanie, thank you for that moving note. Thank you for your prayers, and we all pray for your continued recovery, and we're grateful that you shared your story with us. We also received a thoughtful email from a supporter named Betty. She wrote, "As a little girl living in Brooklyn, my dad always got your Christopher News Notes. He would mail them in every Christmas card. He and my mom would collect spare change and donate it to the Christophers. Your motto about lighting a candle has been ingrained in my heart. I was born in 1957, continued Betty, got married in 1980, my dad passed away in 1990 and my mom in 1997. He and my mom were very religious people, So here is the best part. My husband is Armenian. We have three beautiful sons. And in 2013, my eldest became an Armenian Orthodox priest, and I am so proud of him. I give thanks to the Christophers for planting the seeds of Christ in our family. Betty, thank you for letting us know that the Christopher message has been a part of yours and your family's life for decades, and that it remains ingrained in your heart. We appreciate that message, and may God bless you all. Our final letter today comes from the Carmelite Sisters of Rochester, New York, who wrote to congratulate the Christophers on our 75th anniversary. They wrote, "Congratulations on 75 years of Christopher News Notes. May our Blessed Mother and Jesus Christ and all the angels and saints in heaven surround you and the staff of the Christophers in a huge embrace of love and joy as you celebrate 75 years. Truly, Father James Keller, your founder, was a man of hope. He was also a man of faith and charity. He brought our faith alive and practiced charity all of his life by lighting candles in homes, schools, hospitals, and prisons. God bless you all." Many thanks to the sisters for that encouraging note. And if you have any stories to share about how the Christopher message has helped you, please send it in to us. You can email it to radio@christophers.org, or you can snail mail it to The Christophers, 5 Hanover Square, New York, New York, 10004. Again, that's The Christophers, 5 Hanover Square, New York, New York, 10004. Now, before we end today's show, here's another message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Every November, on the fourth Thursday of the month, we make it a point to remember the people and things for which we are grateful. But instead of just celebrating Thanksgiving once a year, what would happen if we were willing to live in Thanksgiving the whole year through? To help you do just that, the Christophers have prepared a news note called Living in Thanksgiving. It will teach you to stay grounded in gratitude every day of your life. To request your free copy of Living in Thanksgiving, send an email to radio@christophers.org or call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineer for today's show is Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.